Welcome one, welcome all. Thanks for joining us today. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789, or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app. You can call, you can text, you can connect with Town Call. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Type in Civic Media. It's free. It's easy to download. It's Monday, October 9th already. It's a little bit chilly in my neck of the woods. You know, we were joking about the lovely 80 degree days we had last week and how much I enjoyed them. But simultaneously, I was a little like mad at myself for enjoying them because I knew what it represented. But now it's back to a more stereotypical October, nice fall Wisconsin weather. It's crisp. I love it. But we're inside today, coming to you live, recording Town Call. I'm joined, of course, by Aaron Zommers on the ones and twos, and my friend Eric Rolholm. Eric is a Trinity Fellow at Marquette University, pursuing a master's in political science. He is a longtime and excellent, excellent organizer. He is a good friend of mine from the time we spent together in our Wisconsin Revolution. Eric, how are you doing on this Monday afternoon?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much. You're very kind to me. It is a little bit chilly. It's chilly here at Marquette today, too. But I so appreciate you having me. Thank you so much.
Of course. And Eric is a longtime friend of the show. You will recognize his voice from previous episodes because, well, I am his senior in by a couple of years at this point. Eric is absolutely brilliant when it comes to policy and offers a different perspective on a lot of issues in ways that I tend to not look at them. So I love having him as a soundboard to kind of bounce ideas off of. Even if he's not working with me anymore, it's always great to have someone young and brilliant around to be able to give their perspective. And we will be talking about Eric's perspective, particularly amongst youth issues regarding the 2024 election and the House of Representatives speakership. These are topics that we covered extensively last week, but you can never cover these too much because it is incredibly, incredibly important. And we're going to be, I would like to kind of take a positive spin on some information from the weekend when speaking about the Our Wisconsin Revolution convention that was on Saturday. Eric, you were able to join me and discussing where I was on Friday afternoon after Senator Nina Turner joined us Friday afternoon on Town Call. We had a fun little experience as well that I'd love to talk about, but first, we have to mention it. The global news of the weekend, incredibly, incredibly sad, and this just, it breaks my heart, the violence in the Middle East right now. I'm not going to sit around and act like I'm some kind of expert on the subject, so I'm not going to talk about it at length because, again, that's not my area of expertise. I focus on the state of Wisconsin and on the communities that I'm a part of and that I'm able to help directly. But anytime civilian life is put in the middle of conflicts, it breaks my heart. One thing, though, that I do really, really, really want to note, Eric, because I think it's incredibly, incredibly relevant to this situation, is the conditions in Gaza have long been disastrous. I mean, Gaza City is more densely populated than Tel Aviv, London, Shanghai. Airstrikes and targeted attacks that have been leveled on Gaza inevitably hit civilians. There is a very high likelihood of civilian casualties in these situations because of how densely populated these areas are. Children are frequently harmed in attacks because they make up an unusually high percentage of the population. Living conditions in Gaza are bleak. 95% of the population does not have access to clean water. This is the largest open-air prison in the world, and I even brought up a piece of information from, let me get the image so that I make sure I'm quoting it properly, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, because I think mainstream media, particularly in the United States, has only kind of covered this from one aspect, and that's that, of course, Israel is one of the largest allies of the United States. We send a lot of resources and particularly financial resources to Israel. The human cost from 2008 to 2023, starting with the 2008-2009-23 day assault on Gaza. Again, these are numbers according to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. As of August 31st, 2023, 6,407 Palestinian deaths compared to 308 Israeli deaths. Now, all deaths are unacceptable. Let me make that perfectly clear. But I don't think it's fair to see the coverage we are seeing today and the past couple of days, when in reality, this violence has been going on for north of 15 years at this point. One side is incredibly well-funded with the backing of the United States government. And there is, I mean, when I say that Gaza is an open-air prison, those aren't my words. That's the ex-Israeli intel chief. A former UN secretary general called it, quote, hell on earth. 2.2 million people, 50% kids, 50% in poverty, north of 90% without access to clean drinking water. I want to give a shout out to Isaac Rowlett, who's a friend of mine, and the tweet he had, he noted it's nauseated listening to the Israeli Minister for Strategic Affairs, excuse me, on NPR, calling the war between, quote, civilization and barbarism. While I empathize with the Israeli people, their government epitomizes a colonial apartheid regime. As a Jewish person, I stand with the Palestinian people. He also noted that Hamas's actions are despicable, full stop, but they are not a democratically elected government occupying another people's land. Both sideisms obscure the asymmetry here. And I thought that was brilliantly put from Isaac, and incredibly well said. Again, not a conversation that I'm an expert on, but it needs to be noted because this is monumentally important. And this is going to be, I think, the leading story at the national level, at least for the coming days and weeks. And one other point that I have to mention, because it kind of reiterates a point that I've made in the past, particularly regarding American imperialism across the globe, is defense stocks have jumped the past couple of days. Lockheed Martin is up over 4%. Northrop Grumman has climbed nearly 4%. BAE Systems, based out of London, climbed 4%. Dassault Aviation climbed 4%. Some of the largest defense contractors in the world have seen their value jump up by billions of dollars over the past couple of days. Is it a coincidence? I'm not here to say whether or not it is, because again, I want to reiterate, this is not my area of expertise, but I find it despicable when civilians are put in the middle of conflicts between, you know, governments and or elected officials. And in this situation, this is, you know, one of the most contentious issues on the planet. So, Eric, I had to mention it. I'm so sorry for putting you in the middle of that, because I brought you on here to talk about your expertise. But let's jump to a more positive note. And I want to talk about this weekend and the events at the Our Wisconsin Revolution Convention, particularly around Senator Nina Turner and her visit. We got a nice image on screen for those of you watching on the stream. After Senator Turner was on town call on Friday afternoon, Senator Turner, my good friend Professor Harvey K, myself, and my friend Hartzell went down to the picket line at UAW 75 in Milwaukee, the Stellantis plant. It was incredibly exciting and incredibly empowering to be able to go down there and talk to these brave, brave, brave men and women who are really putting their self, their future, their family on the line here to demand better working conditions for themselves and their fellow workers. And this also is not going away. We make the joke about, you know, hot labor summer being like the Hotel California. You can check out, but you can never leave. It is here to stay, and I am just so energized by the mass labor movement across the United States. Individuals being able to say enough is enough. We are sick and tired of the ultra rich and the corporations mistreating us, stealing from us, exploiting our labor so that they can buy their fifth, sixth, seventh McMansion. We are the ones who generate profit. We are the ones who drive industry, and we deserve to get the fruits of some of our labor. Eric? I was going to you.
Sorry about that. Well, first of all, I mean, thank you so much for that very somber opening. And we can definitely talk about how this tragedy relates to many contemporary issues today. You know, this is...
so many of them are intertwined.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And this continues to be a pretty decent dividing line amongst the Democratic Party. And I'm saying that because labor is an issue that is actually not only not particularly a dividing line amongst Democratic voters, but even a lot of independent and Republican voters are now seeing just the absurdity of corporate greed, the absurdity of inequality in this country, and are really turning to the labor movement And to unions and to union elections and the power contained in unions as sort of a way to build power for working people in a way that electoral politics doesn't necessarily always do. That was a big focus, what we talked about on Saturday. It was an amazing convention. It was a lot of fun. I so appreciated our Wisconsin Revolution for having that. Great friends in that room. One of the recurring themes, of course, was sort of the tension between Joe Biden being in many ways the most progressive president we've had in our lifetime, and also really failing to meet the moment for a lot of people, particularly young people.
And that says a lot, Eric, I think, about the presidency as a history, that he has been one of, if not the most progressive presidents in United States history, of course, FDR notwithstanding. But with that being said, it's not only not enough, it's not nearly enough. And we're seeing that reflected in a lot of polling data.
Yeah, no, definitely. And so it was really exciting to hear from Senator Nina Turner, for example, somebody who has been very brutally crushed in her two runs for Congress in the state of Ohio in the Cleveland area, which we're going to touch on Congress a little bit later, time permitting. She has just founded an organization called We Are Somebody. It is a capacity building organization in order to empower labor unions, not unlike the Amazon labor union in Staten Island, was the first successful unionization of an Amazon plant. So really sort of that dual pronged approach of electoral organizing as well as building power for working people certainly seems to be a way that a lot of Americans are finding an opportunity to improve their own living conditions, their own wages, their own healthcare. But of course, it's not enough, right? The structural system, our economic system, our political system is rigged very much to suppress the power of working people and empower the rich, empower the 1%. And so both of those things together are going to be very critical in helping sort of tilt the scales back in the balance of everyday folks like us.
Mm-hmm. And Eric, I also want to give a shout out to a friend of the organization, John Nichols, as well as Professor Harvey Kay, who also spoke at the convention. We had an incredible trio of, in my opinion, some of the best and brightest minds nationally, not only in the state of Wisconsin, but nationally in the progressive movement. And we were able to touch on some of the things that the United States has done in the past. It's not, you know, these are not foreign in the sense that, oh, only Europeans have tried it. This is not radical, outlandish, first-time suggestions. FDR's New Deal incorporated a lot of the ideas and policies that we are pushing for today. We have seen this has been done in the United States in the past. It has worked tremendously. I do not understand why so many citizens are averse to attempting to kind of reclaim our history, something that Professor Kay discusses all the time. But we're going to be continuing the conversation with Eric Rolholm on a Monday, October, what did I say it was? Is it 9th today? Oh man, time flies so fast at this point. Time is an illusion. But the conversation is going to be continuing. You're not going to want to miss it. This is Town Call. We'll be right back. Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789, or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app. You can call, you can text, you can connect with Town Call. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Type in Civic Media. It's free. It's easy to download, and it's Monday, October 9th, joined by my good friend and Trinity Fellow at Marquette University, Eric Rolholm. We are talking youth and their approach to the 2024 election, as well as the speakership, and we're talking a little bit of labor as well. Eric, you made an excellent point during the break regarding kind of the way that mainstream media has approached labor in and of itself. And their demands. Would you like to share that?
Yeah, so we were talking about how chilly it was on the picket line. And, there's this really nasty stereotype that can exist from corporate media that workers, particularly these workers, are already well paid. They're just wanting to take more. 32-hour work week is ridiculous. These workers are lazy. They don't deserve it. This is absolutely ridiculous arguments. I mean, first and foremost, these workers were able to bring the entire production to a halt. These are the workers that built the auto empire here in the United States in the first place. And they're out there in cold and hot, around the clock in this incredibly smart,
7 a.m.
incredibly
to
strategic.
7 p.m. every day.
Yeah, absolutely. In this incredibly strategic way that really, I think, demonstrates not only the toughness, the drive, the passion, the compassion of labor, but how much the working class really does have to contribute to our political and our economic system. So I think this entire exercise, in and of itself, this strike completely disproves the myth that workers don't deserve a living wage. This is proof that they are tough, they are strong, and they are willing to fight for their values because they know that when they are taken care of and when everyone in our economy has a solid foundation, that that's when we will all thrive as a nation.
I say it all the time, Eric, but labor is the engine of the American economy. And the point
Absolutely.
you just made proved that. The workers have shut down production.
Right,
They are the
100%.
ones producing. If the
100%.
CEOs would like to come down and get on the line, they are more than welcome to. They choose not to because they are very well aware that they are not the ones creating this value. And Eric, we're going to swoop into a next point of conversation because this is, I've actually learned quite a bit from you in this regard over the past couple of days. I like to think I'm well versed, but you are incredibly well versed on the conversation of the next speakership of the House.
Sure.
We've joked on air, pitching a few ideas left and right who may or may not be interested. But I think you made a really good point when I was talking with you before the show on the Jim Jordan versus Steve Scalise conversation, and how these appear to be kind of, I don't want to say the two front runners because I don't know if it's fair to give anyone the label of front runner at this point. But those are two individuals who have come up in a lot of conversation amongst people that I know who follow conservative media. And I want to hear your thoughts on how you think this race might play out or how you think it has played out so far.
Totally. Well, first and foremost, I'll be a little bit bold. I'm keeping it in my back pocket that I think there's a non-zero chance that actually the person who could come out of this victorious is actually the Democrats' leader, Hakeem Jeffries. I think there's lots of reasons for that we could maybe get to later. But yeah, Trump had his hat in the ring for a second. Marjorie Taylor Greene, of course, checked him in. But it doesn't seem like that's going to shake out anymore. So we're down to two folks for the most part. That would be Jim Jordan, a very fiery far-right congressman from Ohio, and Steve
And very good
Scalise.
friend of Matt Gates, by the way.
Is or isn't, you said.
Jim Jordan is a good friend of Matt Gates.
Yeah, so folks might remember earlier this year in January, the Kevin McCarthy show. Through the many, many, many cycles of Republicans trying to nominate a speaker, Jim Jordan was somebody that Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert and that very charming crew were trying to put together and pitch at him. And so Steve Scalise, though, is the whip of the House Republican Conference. It's not a caucus, it's a conference. This is a very touchy subject for them for some reason. And that's really interesting for quite a few reasons, because they have some similarities and they have some differences. So Steve Scalise is somebody that you would want to call, I suppose, establishment. He is a very successful fundraiser. He is somebody who is very deeply embedded in the power structures of the rich in the United States. As it pertains to the Israel-Palestine issue, he is a massive recipient of AIPAC funds, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. That's a bipartisan pro-Israel lobbying and campaign arm. So Steve Scalise is very, very entrenched in power. There's some trust issues, though, between him and McCarthy, but he's sort of your establishment pick. Whereas you have Jim Jordan on the other side. This is a very fiery Tea Party, Freedom Caucus type person. This is someone who, as of course it relates to youth issues, this is someone who's particularly agitated and aggressive on trans issues, on LGBT rights overall, on young people, on the climate crisis. And so something that I want to highlight is so that in a lot of ways, that's where this differences between the two of them ends, because there are some similarities here. The Republican extremism overall I think is no accident. It's worth noting both Louisiana and Ohio have huge issues with gerrymandering. These people come from very radically drawn districts with very, very far right supporters that they have chosen, not the other way around, or that Republicans have really chosen for them. That's created an environment where you really have a huge chunk of the Republican conference, rather, that is not only so far right that they're willing to throw out their own speaker, but so far right that they can't even necessarily amongst themselves agree on what priorities even are. And I think that that's really important to note, because in a lot of ways, this is why I bring up Hakeem Jeffries, in a lot of ways, it's very difficult to see with a margin this close how either Scalise or Jim Jordan are going to be able to stitch together 218 people to win that seat. Combine that with the fact that Scalise is unfortunately, I believe, suffering from blood cancer. The job of Speaker of the House is very intensive, not only in terms of the congressional duties, you need to raise a lot of money. It's a lot of work to keep your people together. Nancy Pelosi was very, very successful at that. So that's a very difficult job. But if Jim Jordan, and frankly Scalise either, were to ascend to the speakership, these are people who are not moderate, and they're not even traditional Republicans just because of the way that our politics have shifted lately. These are people who are radically alienating, particularly to young people, but even to independents. And so even if there's this idea right now that the Republicans are not able to govern, I think that's very accurate. But even if they do happen to come together and select a speaker, I think there is a real chance that that will actually backfire on their ability to even hold the House in 2024, just because the beliefs that these people espouse are so, offensive to the sensibilities.
Universally, a lot of their beliefs, like you noted, are universally unpopular amongst the majority of the voting electorate.
Yes. Absolutely. And so it really does sort of prove the impossible binds that the Republicans are trying to accomplish here, both trying to be they're trying to win majorities with positions that are incredibly unpopular, with coalitions that are shrinking, and trying to use big money to sort of keep that afloat at a time, like we said, when Americans are very distrustful of corporate America, at a time when Americans are very frustrated with the level of inequality. And so it's hard to see how this conflict comes out good for anybody besides the Democrats, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the, I'm not a gambling man here, Eric, but I was going to make a prop bets joke on either Hakeem Jeffries winning the speakership, or does this vote go longer than Kevin McCarthy's 1-14 record? Could you see this being another battle that ends up being vote after vote after vote after vote, where just nothing changes, the stalemate increases and intensifies, and it's going to be receiving, significant coverage from all media across the United States? That's a major red flag. And like you noted, that makes the party itself look pretty incompetent. You can't even choose someone to represent yourself. How are you going to represent 350 million Americans?
Right. I think that's really, really important to keep in mind. And so the House is very, very close right now. So I think something that's worth noting as far as how many rounds of voting they'll probably go through, and it will be painful. It's pretty impressive that the Democrats actually have been able to hold together. There's a lot of divisions within that party. There's a few reasons for that. Hakeem Jeffries is clearly a very effective leader at holding them together. There were a number of Democrats in the last couple of caucuses, by the way, that were in a lot of ways very similar to Republicans. I think the term corporate Democrat is very fair. They lost because they were unpopular. So the Democrats that you have left, for the most part, are on the same page with a lot of issues, certainly not all, and I don't agree with them on a lot of issues, to be honest. But they have managed to hold themselves together. On the other side, that same issue, that same principle applies to them too. So there are not a ton of Republicans that are representing Biden districts, but there are some. And that's important because they don't want the smoke of looking like an ugly intra-party feud that they can't govern. You only need, I think, 4 or 5 to peel away in order to make Hakeem Jeffries the speaker in the first place. I don't want to plant any false hope in anybody's head, but this is just illustrating how tough it can be to govern with such a small majority. And, I'd be remiss not to add Kevin McCarthy's crocodile tears at the podium the other day, talking about how, only not 8 or 9 members can, upset speakership. But Republicans barely won the House. Be more popular, espouse positions that Americans care about, compete and win. The problem is not those 8 people. The problem is the Republican Party as a whole. It's unable to represent huge chunks of America, and that's on purpose. And so this is a problem of their own making.
Nail on the head there, Eric. Problem of their own making. I'm going to go to the phone lines quick. We got Jack from Merrimack on. Jack, what are your thoughts on the speakership of the House and how that may play into the 2024 election cycle?
Well, I hope people really wake up and look at the two leading Republicans for that position. You know, we've got Scalise, who I think he's stated he is even doing. I guess we talk about an advisor racist. And then we've got Jim Jordan. And in a speech a couple of days ago, Lynn Cheney pointed out that Jim Jordan was in on the planning of the attempted coups on January 6th. If that guy gets in and he's second in line to the presidency, you talk about a dangerous situation. Wow. I mean, these guys are just something else. And I hope people wake up and see what the Republicans are. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for the call, Jack. I also want to note regarding Jim Jordan, if you look into his history a little bit, you will see that he was a pretty prominent member as well as in regards to the Ohio State University abuse scandal centering around the sexual abuse that occurred between 1978 and 1998 while Richard Strauss was employed as a physician by the Ohio State University. This, I don't know if it's just a Big Ten thing or something, but this has happened throughout a number of programs at the collegiate level, and he was, it's been reported by a number of wrestlers who were involved in that abuse scandal that they had relayed this abuse was happening to Jim Jordan, and he did nothing about it while he was an assistant coach at OSU between 87 and 94, allegedly that he knew about the abuse but failed to take action to stop it. So these are individuals that do not have pristine records, both as government officials and as, you know, those given power over other members of our communities in the past. Particularly, we talked about young people, Eric. These were young college students who went to someone that they were supposed to be able to trust, somebody in a position of authority that they thought would protect them, who just did not. And while these issues are important, I think the speakership is going to be, I think we're a long ways from a conclusion to this story, Eric, and I might even have to bring you back in to cover more of it as the story continues to develop, because if it takes even half as many votes as the McCarthy situation, we are in for a number of long back and forth nights. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I do got to give a shout out to the Chicago Bears, because that's been my running joke, is that Kevin McCarthy, the only team he was better than was the Chicago Bears. He would have had the number one pick in the draft last year. But after they beat down on Washington the other night, maybe Kevin McCarthy has secured his number one draft pick, though he has since forfeited the pick. So we're going to continue this conversation after the break, particularly in regards to the 2024 election itself. Maybe the presidential election cycle, some of the polling data that's come out about that recently, and how this race to the speakership might impact that. Joined by Eric Rollholm today, this is Town Call. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. We got one more segment today. It's going to be a lot of fun. You're not going to want to miss it. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789, or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app. You can call, you can text, you can connect with Town Call. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store, type in Civic Media. It's free, it's easy to download, it's Monday, October 9th, joined by my friend and Trinity Fellow at Marquette University, Eric Rollholm, and we are talking the 2024 election cycle and the speakership of the House in particular. How a lot of, Eric, you made a point during the break that I want to let you kind of elaborate on, because I think it was really insightful regarding funding in particular to certain foreign conflicts that have been at the height of our national conversation for the past couple of months, and again, how all of these issues are kind of intertwined.
Sure. I mean, it's really no secret that even amongst the Democratic Party, frankly, there's a little bit of debate and conflict about how much we should be funding the Ukraine war, how much money we should be spending, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, after the shutdown drama in the House, it was actually the Democratic Senator Michael Bennet on the Senate side, who almost from Colorado, who almost again triggered a shutdown over there not being enough Ukraine funding. So this remains a hot button issue. This is something, to my understanding, that Scalise and Jordan sort of bash heads about. Jordan has been sort of at the forefront of the mantle of talking about, talking very critically about Ukraine funding and funding for that war overall. There might be a little bit of softness there, where it's a little unclear to me whether that's an attempt to sort of warm him up to the MAGA base or whether that's something that he actually cares about. But
is he capitulating or does he care?
Right. And I mean, a huge similarity, regardless as far as military aid goes, is, of course, Congress has the power of the purse. And if we only have a speaker pro tempore, we don't have a real speaker of the House. McHenry would have his feelings hurt that I said that, but he's our speaker pro tempore right now. But we needed somebody in that leadership seat in order to even be facilitating that process. So whatever side you fall on that debate, on that issue, I mean, it's just the pragmatic reality that the House is in a state of paralysis right now. And we're really not effectively able to respond to crises like this. I think you could make a very convincing case that this this instability in the House is a national security risk for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I think when we touch about on funding and instability, the key part of that conversation is Americans want to know that they're being represented and that we have the ability to lead through crises. And if you can't even lead your own party out of, you know, your closed door caucus meetings and be able to say, like, this is our leadership, this is someone who speaks for us, this is who's going to represent us, how do you expect to lead the nation and the world in any way, shape, or form when you can't even, you know, it's the old adage about clean your own room before you worry about your siblings or whatever, that if you can't get your own ducks in a line, you really have no place trying to tell anyone or anything else how they're supposed to be handling their situations. And do you think, Eric, that this is going to impact the 2024 election cycle? Obviously, you're on a college campus. You're around young voters. And what are you hearing in regards to potentially the, because let's say it as it is. It's looking very likely right now that this is going to be Joe Biden versus Donald Trump part two. It's going to be the rematch. It does not appear that any other serious Republican candidate has a shot of dethroning Donald Trump.
Sure. I definitely think it will. You know, one thing that I do agree with Jim Jordan about that he said the other day is that the top issue on Americans' minds is not Ukraine. And I think that's pretty hard to dispute. Americans are very concerned about how much money they're taking home from their paychecks. They're concerned about the cost of groceries. They're concerned about the cost of gas. They're concerned about the cost of healthcare. And this is sort of the really interesting sort of catch-22 binds that we're in right now, is that both Scalise and Jim Jordan and Donald Trump, too, frankly, are very alienating, polarizing figures that Americans do not agree with. At the same time, Joe Biden's approval rating is not great, and it's particularly not great with young people. That is, I think, really important to keep in mind. You know, I've heard very divergent opinions on this campus. I've heard people say they're pretty vaguely supportive of him. I've heard some support for the Ukraine funding. I've heard some support about his National Labor Relations Board and how he's been willing to walk the picket line.
He's the first sitting president to ever walk a picket line. I love giving credit where credit is due, and he does deserve credit for that because that's a big deal. But as we noted, Eric, he was not doing that out of the goodness of his heart. He was doing that because public pressure necessitated it. We are seeing data, polling data show that the vast majority of the United States public supports these striking workers.
Yeah, totally. And it's no accident that the UAW is one of the major unions that did not just automatically roll over and endorse Joe Biden. I think that's worth noting, too. Of course, there's a lot of frustration around here about student loan debt. There is some debate about whether the finger is best really pointed at the Supreme Court or at Joe Biden himself. I think you could make sort of a convincing argument both ways. And this is not everybody's favorite topic. It's a little uncomfortable. But what the number one thing I hear from other people is that Joe Biden is really old. cold. Not only is that a risk for in a lot of people's minds for his national security and for his ability to actually get deals done, but that he's out of touch, that he's been in office for 50 years from Delaware, the state with by far the highest concentration of corporations. And no matter how we might feel about him, he is out of touch. You know, he's been in the United States Senate and now in the presidency for 50 years. This is a person who a lot of young people, you know, who are really struggling with the cost of rent, with the cost of healthcare, don't feel particularly connected to, especially Gen Z voters of color, especially Gen Z voters of color without a degree, tend to be really, really undecided in this next election. And so if Joe Biden wants to hold together the coalition or even expand the coalition that helps him win Wisconsin, win Georgia, win Michigan, and win the presidency, it's going to take a lot of work, and it's probably going to take some additional promises to young people that this time he needs to follow through on. And so does the House and the Senate, I will add.
That's I think that's the point of note right there, is promises only go so far. You need to be able to follow through on those promises, or you inevitably become the boy who cries wolf, right? You and I joke about this with the Democratic Party all the time. It can't be the most important election of your lifetime every single election cycle. You get young people to come out and vote every single election cycle because they believe it's the most important election of their lives, and then nothing changes.
Right. I'd be remiss, by the way, not to add that Donald Trump is no spring chicken either. And Donald Trump's policy positions are absolutely anathema to what most young people want and care about and value. So once again, it looks like we're going to be wandering, barring any large changes, wandering into an election cycle of lesser evil voting where people are not particularly fond of either big option.
Yep, it's old versus older. These aren't even boomers. These are the greatest generation, right? I believe the median age in the United States is like 37 or something. So this is not reflective of U.S. demographics. Eric, thank you so much for joining us today. Give a shout out quick. Where can we find you if we want to learn more about you or what kind of work you're doing?
Oh, gosh. Actually, that's a really good question. I've been a little social media averse for a while, but I'm still a fan of X, formerly Twitter. So for any news or opinions or takes from me, please do follow on X as Eric_Rerholm on X.
On the platform formerly known as Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us today, Eric. We're going to be back tomorrow on Tuesday, Town Call, talking the state of Wisconsin, and particularly the Brewers Stadium funding, as we will be joined by Representative Christine Sinicki. You're not going to want to miss that. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. Take it easy, party people.
We'll see you then.